Welcome to Irish Illustrated's Cracking the Trail. I'm Drew Mentock, joined as always by Irish Illustrated Senior Recruiting Analyst Eric Thomas and 24/7 Sports National Recruiting Analyst Tom Loy. There isn't too much recruiting news going on at the moment, but high school football across the country kicked off recently. A bunch of Notre Dame commits are in action, including a few who are dealing with some unfortunate injuries. Eric, quickly, just to start us off, could you provide the latest on offensive tackle Jackson Hill, interior lineman Richie Flanagan, and 2028 safety Andre Jones, the younger brother of Julius Jones Jr.?
Yeah, so several injuries that took place over the last week and change or so. Andre Jones is a little bit older, but I'll start with Hill. Jackson Hill did not appear in their game last Friday night. Before the game, it was made clear that he was unavailable, but no further comment was made. After the game, Eric Sondheimer of the LA Times, he's like the dawn of West Coast football recruiting, man. That guy's been doing it forever. He, you know, reported that Hill is going to miss the rest of the season. He had a knee surgery earlier in the week, it sounded like. So that's going to be a bit of a hurdle for him, right? Like, this is a player that has only played football since he came into high school. So this was going to be his fourth season. He's a three-star player who I think very much so had the upside of a guy like Charlie Tom in the 2026 class. Like, he could have had that senior rise. He's been playing exceptionally well. He's physical, got a great frame. So it's really unfortunate for a player who was really ascendant that he's going to miss that time. But fortunately for him, Notre Dame does have a little bit of a model of how to handle this with an early enrolling player who gets hurt, you know, right before, right in the beginning of the season. They just did this with Gordy Solfstedt in the 2025 class. He tore his ACL like the week before football season started, his senior year, came to Notre Dame, finished up his rehab there. So Notre Dame does have some experience with kind of, you know, getting these guys on track with the rehab and then getting them into their building and everything. But it's just super unfortunate. With Richie Flanagan, scare, he went down, had to be helped off in the fourth quarter of a game that went into overtime. I texted Richie. He said it was just cramping. He's fine. He's already back at practice this week, so he's ready to roll. You know, that's going to be something you see in the early season between the heat and guys getting to their, you know, game day conditioning. Cramping is going to be an issue. So a little bit of a scare there. And then the one that's maybe the most ambiguous, Andre Jones, I was told he has a hamstring issue. It's why he sat out of the scrimmage 2 weeks ago and why he wasn't on the field for the opener. Obviously, look, hamstrings have a degree of or a range of severity. I didn't get a lot of insight into how severe his was. Like, I don't believe it's a hamstring tear. I think that would have been made clear. But obviously, as we saw with Jaden Greathouse last year, hamstring injuries are just tough. They don't go away. The only way to really handle them is to stretch and rest. And when you're actively playing football and using your hamstring and pretty much any motion you make, it's very difficult to get that the amount of rest it needs to get to 100%. So I'm not 100% sure if this is like he's still in the throes of it and working through it, if they're just trying to get him to 100%. But in any case, it's a hamstring injury. The expectation would be we'll probably see him again at some point this season. But again, you just don't know with how these things tend to drag out. It feels like it's a little bit too early to say anything definitively about his health.
Yeah, to my knowledge, I think Andre's may have been, he may have been dealing with that way back when I was there for Mark Matthews' commitment. I remember he and Julius were not working out that day. Julius was basically just coaching. And I remember Andre not, I mean, first of all, he looks the part physically and he looks great, but it was, I just remember him not being able to kind of move around really well. And he wasn't ready to practice. So this is something that I think has been lingering for a while. And you nailed it, man. Like with Greathouse, like it's the worst thing to have. It doesn't even sound like it's that severe, but it's nagging and constant. So hopefully he can get back on the field, because he's the guy that, I don't want to speak for our entire scouting team, but he's the guy that I was really, really excited to see this fall.
Yeah, and it's a really easy injury to re-aggravate too. Like, you might feel good, it might seem like you can do everything, but then it happens again and you restart the whole process. So I assume better for him to take it easy and make sure he's fully back. And then with that, we're actually going to jump right into subscriber questions today with burning up the board. So let's start with Irish 2025's question. If you had to make a 2028 mock class, who are five uncommitted dark horse players you would include on your list? I'm not talking about Theo Schott or Jack McNamara. I want deep pulls, you guys.
Yeah, I felt It was funny being asked a question and being told like the rules of my question or my answer. But you know what? Like, and yeah, I do feel like the guys that he mentioned, Theo Shaw, Jack McNamara, would probably be on my list, but we'll take it a step further. I think I'm gonna go a little bit more than five because I just want to kind of provide some context. At quarterback, I do believe it'll end up being, whether people love this or don't, I think it'll end up being Brady Quinn or Hunter Fujikawa. I do believe that Josiah Boyd, like I've mentioned a couple weeks now, like he's absolutely a contender to get the next scholarship offer from Notre Dame at quarterback. But I think kind of big picture looking ahead, I do believe that they have a better shot of landing Fujikawa, a guy who I really like, and I think he's in line to have a huge junior season. And then Brady Quinn, man, talk about off to a hot start for his junior campaign. He's a guy, look, he's not super flashy, but I've seen him a ton, and I do believe that he is getting better and better. I don't think he's like a first off the bus guy. He's not like the most, physically imposing, but in terms of just growth on the field, 7-on-7, his intelligence, knowledge of the game, ability to command, lead. He's a popular name. I thought he did some really nice things with SFE, South Florida Express, this offseason. So I do believe that that would be a quality pickup for Notre Dame at the quarterback position. I think everybody sees the name and gets kind of excited and then realize that there's no actual connection to the Brady Quinn from back in the day. But I do believe this Brady Quinn from Florida would be a nice pickup for Notre Dame and in the 28 class. But a couple others, I think, if we're looking for like deep cuts here, Aceley Brown, the running back, top 247 out of Mississippi. I continue to talk to him and his people, and they are very, very clear that Notre Dame is a top contender there. I mean, he's, we got Jalen Adai, an elite prospect. I think that whole big picture, if you look at the way college football is working right now, I do believe that would surprise a lot of people if they were able to pull that and beat Texas A&M, LSU. And, obviously his dad played there, and the Tigers are going to have a stranglehold on that one. And Lane Kiffin loves throwing the ball, but I believe he checks a lot of boxes for Notre Dame, and Notre Dame checks a lot of boxes for him. So I think he's one to watch. Three-star wide receiver Marshawn Thornton, push for this guy out of Chicago. I don't know, Eric, your take on him, but I
Love him.
love the kid. I think he's outstanding. If you go to Fort Wayne, you got Maddox Wile, whatever you want to say his last name. A kid I've seen a ton. He's a jitterbug. He's small. He's quick. He's elusive, but he is a big play threat. Yes, you have the tight ends, McNamara, Shott, Trey Euler. You could throw him in the mix. I'm curious to see if Notre Dame offers Jevon Severson. I think that's one to watch, that if they do make a push for him, I think he could end up in the class. And then two more. Absolutely love Grant Bowen, the Iowa legacy out of Illinois, right on that cusp of the top 100 ranking. I think he's a guy that Notre Dame could eventually land, whether it's tight end, edge rusher, it doesn't matter. Get this kid in your program and find the best fit for him. And then one more, Asa Birch out of Ohio. You got Ohio State, Michigan, some others in play. There's a lot of chatter about Ohio State, Michigan. I think Notre Dame is a very serious dark horse threat to land him and pull him. I know he had that big visit in the offseason, and it was an eye-opener. So again, really, really good class if you can land a lot of these guys, because there's some big time players. And you know what? Kudos to Marcus Freeman, because he is a big game hunting across the country.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, for my list, I like the context here, because I think there's a few different ways to answer. So I was trying to look at like three stars, like who's a little bit more dark horse, like in the ranking side of things. So I went quarterback. I did go with Josiah Boyd. I agree with where Tom's head is at in terms of the likelihood here, but my God, do I just really like the tools there. I think that kid is going to be pretty astounding if he can put it all together. So that's kind of where I went with that one. On the wide receiver front, I went with Owen Johnson out of LaSalle College, Joey O'Brien's former teammate. He's a smaller player than Connor Salmon in the last cycle, but I think there's some similarities in the play style and in the speed and in some of the physical traits that make him a really good player and kind of made Salmon a desirable wide receiver take for Notre Dame. On the interior offensive line, Providence Catholic, Ben Coleman, he's a player I really like the film. He was a big part of their sort of holding on tough win here last week. he's just a tough-minded player. When you hear people talk about him, they talk about like the mindset that kind of sounds like some of the offensive linemen that have come through Notre Dame recently and been leaders in the program. Like, he's just really tied in. He's tied in with his teammates, tied in with the locker room. He's that guy that people look to, is kind of like that leader through action. So I really like what Ben Coleman has to offer out of Illinois. On the defensive line, I really like Arthur Jones out of New York. He's the younger member here of the Jones family. So obviously, like, Chandler Jones back on the Arizona Cardinals, and John Jones, the MMA fighter. Like, it's a very athletic pedigree family he comes from. And I just really like what the Syracuse legacy really has to offer on the defensive line. I think he's got a good motor. I think he's a physical player. I think that there's a lot to like about his game. And then the one I'll throw out there, again, I know linebacker is a really important position for Notre Dame in the cycle. So I like Deshaun Simmons. Kid's like, what, 6'3". I mean, he's got plenty of length. He's fast. He's aggressive. He's super athletic at that size. If you're looking at making additions in the linebacker room in this next class, I think that length and that sort of NFL body type is something that they need to be targeting, especially with the potential turnover. And so Deshaun Simmons is kind of the further down the rankings guy that I think just he has all the tools to be a successful Notre Dame linebacker.
Well, I think you both thoroughly answered Irish 2025's question there. So great job. Next is a question from VA Doc 88. Which three programs do you feel are Notre Dame's most important recruiting rivals? Are there some programs that are more competitive for certain position groups in particular?
This is an interesting one because, like, recruiting rivals changes over time, right? Like, when I was working with Notre Dame, I felt like we went head-to-head with Ohio State, like, one-to-one more than they have been in recent years. And there was a lot of Texas overlap when Notre Dame was kind of pushing in that direction. Lately in the NIL era, it seems like Notre Dame is really butting heads quite a bit with Oregon, Texas A&M, and then I put four. I said LSU and Miami are kind of that next tier. And those are the ones that we just keep seeing. And when you look at the caliber of player Notre Dame is recruiting, when you look at the investment that's required, those are the players who are in the same sandbox as Notre Dame. So it makes sense that there's a lot of head-to-head and kind of bristling there. The one that's really fun for me is A&M because obviously A&M is kind of a unique school within the SEC, right? They're one of the, not the latest group of additions, but they kind of joined the SEC from the Big 12, and they have the historic rivalries. They have kind of the underperforming tag where they always have the budget and they always have good players, but they haven't won the Natty. So, like, they're a fascinating one to have launched into this group because otherwise it's like a bunch of traditional blue bloods. So that one is just sort of fascinating for me to see develop as they go on because it seems like A&M is gearing up to, you know, be effectively in that blue blood status, even without that historic component there. So seeing Notre Dame continue to butt heads with them as both programs are in this ascendant mode is just really interesting.
I think if you look down the commit list and you see the schools that they're beating to land these top guys, you mentioned quickly like Texas A&M, LSU, Miami, LSU again, Miami, Penn State, North Carolina, Penn State, Ohio State, Miami, Florida. Like, what I love most about what Marcus Freeman's doing is that they don't care where you're from and they don't care who they have to go toe to toe with. Alabama, Auburn, Michigan, Ohio State, USC, UCLA, Oregon. It doesn't matter. Like, they will find the best talent and they will go toe to toe to make sure that those guys end up in Notre Dame. So I think you kind of hit it on the head, Eric, when you said like it's different from when you worked there compared to now. Back in the day, they were finding the best football players that had to be the highest of high academic fits. There was very little wiggle room to get kids into school. And now it's like, I think it's the best of both worlds. They're finding elite football players and they're finding the kids that may not have the best academic experience, transcript, things like that in high school, but have the work ethic to be great at Notre Dame off the field and really achieve great things when you surround them with people that care about them and want to achieve success and take that, the academics and the intelligence and take it to another level. The guys that are willing to put in the work and want Notre Dame and everything it entails. So I really love what they're doing. They're always going to recruit against Miami and the Chicago area because there's some coaches on staff that love that and see it as a hotbed. They're going to be pushing against A&M and Oregon. So those are a couple schools to watch. But again, I just love the way that Marcus Freeman, Mike Martin, Carter Aumann, and that entire staff is just so focused on, hey, don't care where you are. If our quarterback comes from Florida, Georgia, or Hawaii, don't care. We're going to recruit the best players, and we are going to go toe-to-toe because you know what? We're Notre Dame, and we can compete with anybody.
Next up, we have a question from Jimmy McGill One. Which positions do you think Notre Dame could be better at in 2028 class than, especially compared to the 2027 class? Which players at those positions make you feel that way?
I would just say quickly, I think it's going to be tough to beat what they've done along the defensive and offensive lines in 2027, in 2028. I think that's going to be tough. I do believe that they got an opportunity to put together a great linebacker group. If they can land Taj Gray, Jameer Miles, maybe flip Cale Britt from Wisconsin. I know that there's still communication there. And then I think tight end, when I already mentioned a lot of the guys, Grant Bowen, potentially offer Jevon Severson, JC Wessels out there, Jack McNamara, Theo Schott, Trey Oiler. Like, I think, and I like Titus Hawk, but I think that if you can land two of those guys in 28, I'm gonna like that group a little bit more than what they did in 2027. So I'd say linebacker, tight end are definitely a spot to be desired. I it's hard for me to get figure out what they're going to do at quarterback because I haven't seen Champ Mons in person. So outside of a couple of years ago at the underclassmen combine, I mean, I haven't seen him recently. My plan is to go see him at some point this fall and get that true in-person eval. But I think that Hunter Fujikawa is a kid that, like, everybody's super excited about Champ. I think everybody should be super excited about potentially adding him to the group because I think he's that good. And I also don't think Brady Quinn's a big drop off from Champ Mons. I think those are guys that can compete with each other in the same room, just like a lot of the guys in the current roster at the quarterback position. So that are not named CJ Carr, I should say. So, you know, Noah, Teddy. I mean, I think there's going to be some really good battles at that position. So I just feel like there's some fans out there that are very, you know, focused on stars. I just think people need to understand, like, there is a process to all of this and things take time. And he may be a guy, may just be a high three star right now. He could end up in the top 100 a year from now because they finally decided to play their junior season and they actually got better and got bigger and faster and stronger and things happened. So, but yeah, linebacker and tight end are the ones I'm watching more. Eric, I'm sure you got a ton of others. But yeah, this is, I want you guys to understand, like, the 26 and 27 classes are really, really good. So if you can compete in 2028, man, geez, I can only imagine how good this team is going to be for the next couple of years.
Yeah, and to that point about the 27 class being good, like, they've even had so many reinforcements from talented 2028 kids reclassifying as that wave has gone up that, like, even position groups that were like, yeah, they're pretty good, it's now like, oh my God, they have so much talent in them because there's so many young kids who have jumped up. So it's pretty incredible how even the outlook on the 27 class in the last 6 months at the top of some positions has flipped. But kind of mirroring Loy, the positions I shouted out, tight end, I mean, the whole offer list of guys they've offered at tight end is awesome. Obviously, last cycle, they tried to stick the landing on the duo of Jackson Dollar and Seneca Driver. That didn't quite work out. But if they land any two of Grant Bowen, Braxton Rein, JC Wessel, Jack McNamara, Theo Schott, or Trey Oiler, like, I think it's going to be competitive with what that Dollar Driver group had been. Now, is it necessarily going to be just as good? Maybe not. But again, like, if that was the outlook in 27 and you can get anything close to that, I think that's an improvement right off the bat, right? At linebacker, I know it's been a bit of a struggle in 27, at least so far. We've kind of talked about in this podcast in the past that there's still some flip candidates that could change the outlook on that position. So that bears kind of mentioning. But look, landing Taj Gray immediately is like a huge lift for potentially improving on that group. I love the game, the play of like guys like Jameer Miles, Skylar Alston, and Deshaun Simmons, Cale Britt. You know, Tom mentioned a few of those guys. I listed them out here. Like, there's enough volume of good players that have like NFL body types and athleticism in that class that I think that they could improve there. And then the other one I would mention is wide receiver. Like, I really like the wide receivers that Notre Dame got in the 27 class. So this isn't necessarily a dig on them, but there's only two of them. So if Notre Dame has a bigger group, let's say they double that next cycle, they end up taking four guys at the receiver position. Well, your options are guys like Jalen Adai, Lorenzo McMullen, J.C. Hallis, Dedrick Kimbrough, Marshawn Thornton, Owen Johnson, Maddox Whale, and Kellen Miller. You land any three or four of those guys, and you arguably have an improvement on the last cycle just on the merit of volume. So I think that that's a position that I would identify as well. And just like Tom said, it's going to be near impossible to beat the offensive and defensive lines. Like if you go out and land a couple of choice targets at each one, okay, maybe the top end is competitive, but just from a volume perspective, they can't match it. It's just the numbers aren't there.
Next question is from NJL Irish. Does the NCAA's 5-for-5 rule, 5-for-5 rule change anything strategically for how Notre Dame recruits going forward? Eric, we'll start with you on this one.
Yeah, there's a couple things that it changes. So the main one that kind of jumps out to me is I would think the average class size is going to decrease a little bit. And that's just because more guys are going to have the opportunity to stay. They're going to stick around, get their degree and play. And especially at Notre Dame, like this is a place where for talking about kind of the privilege of being a Notre Dame fan, like watching along, we don't have to worry so much about like the off-season flight of guys entering the transfer portal. Like every single year, Notre Dame has a couple of guys leave. It's mostly predictable, and there's been very few surprises over the last few years. There's been very few true playmakers who left and went in the portal. Obviously, there's exceptions, but for the most part, Notre Dame kind of enjoys a privileged existence in the portal era already. So now having that 5-for-5 benefit where you're not having to worry about these conversations about wasting a year or trying to preserve eligibility, that just allows guys to fully buy in, get their degree, and even if they're not going to play, you can be a little bit less worried about them jumping, especially since Notre Dame gets most of these guys set to graduate in 3.5 years anyway. The other side of things to the class sizes is with the underclassmen transfers door open moving forward, I would expect a few spots to be held open for guys like that who can come in every single year. And realistically, when you're looking at an underclassman versus a one-year rental, that allows you to be a little bit more flexible. And hey, we look at this guy as an investment, not just an immediate potential payoff, right? So you have to keep spots open. And then just in terms of like the actual pitch and sell, like before Notre Dame could pitch, yeah, we'll get you on the field early. We want to get you in the door like every other school in the world. But what that would look like in practice is when guys got there, unless they were just like a world beater who was undeniable, there comes a moment in the season where you're having kind of a weird, uncomfortable conversation about, do we want to put you on the shelf for a little bit until the playoffs, or do we want to preserve the eligibility? And that can cause discomfort with kids, and that can cause some bitterness if they had a role and it's gone. So that whole element of it is just gone now. They can sell roles to these guys. They can get them involved early. They can get them in a position to prove themselves on Saturdays and get them moving through. So I think overall it's going to make the reserves a little bit deeper because now you're not worried like, God, do we play Dunham for game five, even though he's been an ascending player? That's just out of the window now. Dunham's going to play if they think he can play. And I use him as an example because obviously he rests in the spring, but even further down the line, like you could have a guy like Thomas Davis Jr. prove to like, hey, he is just undeniable on special teams. We need to get him in there as an every game player contributor on that unit. And he ultimately starts to carve a role for himself going into next year. Like, those kind of sells and being able to point to those things are only going to help Notre Dame as they sort of look at these guys in the eye and say, hey, we know we're recruiting a ton of talent. We know we're recruiting a ton of competition. But if you come in here and do the things we ask you to do, like Marcus Freeman said the other day, clear your plate and keep asking for more, like we're going to get you on the field.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. I just think that, I want to speak for Marcus Freeman, but I'm pretty confident he would much rather have a bunch of guys that want to be developed, want to stick around for a few years, as opposed to a bunch of one and done transfers coming in. He's not going to be, he wants to build his program the right way and have them kind of grow in his program. And I think they kind of proved that. And they, when we talked about Osani Gales, no longer having a spot because they're trying to make sure that they have a spot and room for a guy like Jordan Faison, who's been in the system for years now, and he's growing, and we'll see how things go after this season, but they want to make sure that he's going to be back and he's going to have a spot, and they're only going to take two receivers, and they're just focused on bringing guys in and having them stick around and not just adding guys to add guys. And you kind of stated it, if they don't come in and carve out a role, they're likely going to leave, and for their own benefit of playing elsewhere. Whereas on the flip side for Notre Dame, if they don't come in and carve out a role, it's one of two things. A, they're just not ready. And like, hey, they're a slower burn. And a year from now, they're going to be monsters in the weight room and everything's great. On the other side, it is, it could be a case where they're just, they're not what they want to play, but maybe they're not what Notre Dame thought they were going to be. It could be a miss eval. Like, there's just a lot of things in play. I just feel like they're always going to prioritize high school recruiting over the transfer portal. They want to make sure that the roster is loaded with as many day one ready guys heading into the season. And I don't just mean freshmen. I mean like day one ready guys. Like, it could be a CJ Carr, a Jaden Greathouse upperclassman, to a day one ready guy like a Joey O'Brien or Rodney Dunham, guys that are perfect fits. So the 5 for 5 thing is interesting. I think everybody's kind of like, oh, it's a thing now. We got to monitor it. But I think it's such a slow burn for Marcus Freeman. I don't think much is going to change for him. He's going to continue recruiting the right way, focusing on guys that want to be at Notre Dame for a long time. And I will say, like, if there's guys that don't want to be there anymore or guys that aren't going to play, he's going to be very honest with them. And he has done a very, very good job of helping find them spots to land once they leave Notre Dame. Like, they're not going to play like, oh, we're just cutting you and good luck. That's just not how he's built. So I like what they're doing right now.
And the Ohsani Gales reference leads well into our last question from the Salty Jazz 14. Did you ever think you'd live to see a world where Notre Dame would pass on a composite 5-star wide receiver for reasons?
I guess it's a choice. It's not a choice I would have made. I think he's absolutely a guy you get in your program, and he's a guy that, again, I just talked about fits and knowing everything about Notre Dame and wanting to be a part of it, and the academics, the off the field type stuff. He is a perfect fit at Notre Dame. I get it. Like, you have numbers, you have roster, you have to manage it. I just happen to disagree with the decision. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
That's Ibid. That's exactly where I'm at. That's a talented kid to say no to,
Yeah, it's good for him and good for Washington or Alabama, depending on where he eventually lands.
man. They got a good one,
Damn,
man.
man. He'd have been pretty good at Notre Dame.
Watching him
Well,
in their opener against Lone Peak was just like, oh man, that's some serious
this
FOMO.
kid's pretty good at football, huh? Yeah.
Might have made the classic mistake of ending on a down note, but that is a wrap for this edition of the Irish Illustrated Tracking the Trail podcast. Thank you for everyone who tuned in. Eric and Tom, once again, really appreciate your perspective and jumping in and doing a lot of research on some subscriber questions today. We'll be back next week with our first game week schedule of the season. We'll have two episodes of Irish Illustrated Insider on Monday and Thursday to preview the season opening matchup against Wisconsin and Lambeau Field. Also, right now, you can save 60% on Irish Illustrated through September 1st with the discounted annual and full price monthly subscriptions for new members. Your first month is just $1 under this deal. To sign up, go to irishillustrated.com and look for the story on the front page. And with that, we'll see you all again soon.